Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on ancient man when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools and in our public institutions. We've now made them a part of our national psyche. That's why I contend that this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Now, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right, she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. And they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, or natural law, or karma, or something else, you know, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. .org. And then you can click on to our archives page. And on the archives page, you'll find that free general law CD package, and you can download it right there in the privacy of your own home. That way I don't have to send you a plain brown wrapped, brown labeled package. Nobody will know but you. All right, we've been talking about ancient man from the perspective of Dead Man's Secrets, written by Jonathan Gray, in Chapter 6. I've already reviewed the book, and I did that a couple of years ago. And what I wanted to do is to take a look at it from the perspective of ancient man. Again, we've been told from the time we're little children that man has been evolving, and he's getting smarter and smarter and stronger and better looking, and that we evolved from monkeys. And now look at us today. But when we go into the laboratory, when we go out into the field, we find that that's not the evidence that we're finding. So we've been looking at the evidence. And there's another little piece of evidence over here that we want to take a look at, and that's this thing of what do the field results tell us about uniformitarianism? Why the long ages syndrome? You know, they tell us that this happened over millions and millions and billions and billions and hundreds of thousands of years. But when we actually put this to the test, this is called uniformitarianism or uniformitarian geology. Dr. Henry Morris, remember last program, Dr. Henry Morris put these standard evolutionary assumptions to the test. And Dr. Morris set out to calculate the age of the Earth from the various natural processes, such as the uniform decay of the Earth's magnetic field, the erosion of lands, and the gradual influx of chemicals into the ocean. In fact, he compiled a table of 70 separate natural processes of worldwide change. 70. Let me give you three or four of them. Because every one of these 70 processes corroborate the Bible and its story, and they refute evolutionary philosophy and its lies. 70 out of 70. Now let me give you an illustration of that. Let's take a look here at the Earth's magnetic field. Around the Earth today, there is a magnetic field. That magnetic field is decreasing. It has been decreasing. Every 800 years, it decreases by half. So 800 years ago, the Earth's magnetic field was twice as strong as it is today. 1600 years ago, it was four times as strong. 3200 years ago, and so on down the line. Now, there was a time when the Earth's magnetic field was much, much stronger than it is today. Furthermore, the Earth's magnetic field is running down at the rate of one-half every 800 years, and when the Earth's magnetic field ceases to exist, biological life as we know it on this planet will cease to exist. You see, you have to have that magnetic field in order for it to work. Now, if we were to go back using uniformitarian geology as our, or uniformitarianism as our model, and we go back 1,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 1,000,000, 5,000,000, 10,000,000 years ago. Remember, this field deteriorates by 50% in 800 years. So it decreases by geometric progression. So if we went back, you know, 1,000,000 years or 1,000,000,000 years, this planet would have a magnetic field of so much power, no life could exist here. And we're not talking about millions and billions. We're just talking about a few thousand years ago. You wouldn't have been able to live on the planet. Listen to this. Charles Lyell, remember, he's one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. And well, Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that everyone believes them, even though they don't know who it was that originated them. But the guy's name is Charles Lyell. It's from Lyell's system of reasoning that this doctrine of origins has been devised. And they did it by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And that way they could rule out catastrophes like Noah's flood. They've been strictly ruled out. And this process they call science. It's not, it's philosophy, but they call it science. Well, listen to this. Physicist Thomas Barnes points out that the Earth's magnetic field has been decaying regularly since it was first measured in 1835. If the half-life of the field is truly what Dr. Barnes has shown from careful measurements, the conclusion is that the Earth's magnetic field would have been equal to that of a magnetic star as little as 10,000 years ago. That's right. Just 10,000 years ago, if this thing is decreasing by 50% every 800 years, we would have a magnetic star. You couldn't live on the planet 10,000 years ago. So now one of two things. Either the magnetic field hasn't always been decreasing by 50% over 800 years, which tells us that uniformitarianism isn't true, at least in this instance. And if it's not true in this instance, why would we believe it's true in some other instance? Or there are changes in the Earth's magnetic field, and sometimes it decreases by more or less. Or there may be a catastrophe like Noah's flood, or a comet that strikes the Earth from outer space once every 65 million years, in which case then the uniformitarian belief or philosophy isn't true. It doesn't hold up. It isn't the same year in and year out forever. It changes. You know, you've got to face reality. It's one or the other. Now, according to Dr. Barnes, to be consistent with the laws of physics and assuming the magnetic field has continually weakened, we can only conclude that life on Earth would not have been possible more than 10,000 years ago. Now, remember when we went to school, I don't know about the rest of you youngsters out there, but when I was in school, they told us that the dinosaurs disappeared 65 million years ago. All right, now if the dinosaurs died 65 million years ago and 10,000 years ago it was impossible for life to exist on the planet, what's that tell you? Come on, we don't have to be Rhodes Scholars now to figure out that this evolutionary philosophy of uniformitarianism is as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. Let's try another one. You've heard of erosion. Well, consider the present rate of erosion tearing down the world's land mass and filling into the oceans. The indications of continental geography show that the past rates of erosion were much greater than they are today. So, even at that, we'll just take the erosion that we can observe today, just today's rate. They go down to the Amazon basin and they take a water sample. Then they estimate, well, how much water is running out of the river right now? And then they get their sharp EL1197 cooking, and they come to a conclusion. They say, well, every year, so many millions of tons of earth are flowing out into the ocean. Then they do that with the Nile River and the Mississippi River and all these rivers around the world, and they've got numbers. You know, these guys, they're working on your taxpayer dollars. This is your tax money at work. And here's what it tells us. At the present rate of erosion, there should have accumulated at least 30 times more sediment in the ocean today than there actually is. And, of course, this is based on the assumption that the ocean has been there for at least a billion years. Now, that's what they've been telling us. They say that the ocean's been there, just like it is, for a billion years. And in that billion years, all the processes that we're observing today have been going on. The Amazon's been running into the ocean and so on. Well, okay, if we take the amount of sediment that's actually in the ocean and the amount of sediment that's going into the ocean and we extrapolate that back, there should be 30 times more of it in there and it ain't there. Again, this is one of Dr. Henry Morris's 70 tests. When we actually go out into the field, we actually perform a scientific test on these evolutionary prognostications, they don't work. Now go back and take a look at Genesis 6, 7, 8, and 9. And by God, they work. We're talking about a big flood. And that big flood will account for the Grand Canyon and the amount of sediment that's in the oceans. And all of the scientific processes that we're observing today fit perfectly with that worldwide flood. That's scientific. That's provable. That's demonstrable. That's not philosophy. It ain't even religion. And that's what evolution does. See, they come along to us and they say, oh, we can't discuss the Bible because that's religion. But we can discuss naturalism and uniformitarianism because that's science. Now, the truth of the matter is the Bible isn't a religious book. Let me repeat that. The Bible isn't a religious book. It's a science book. It's a history book. It's a law book. But the one thing it isn't is philosophy. Nothing about religion in there. That's what the preachers have told us. That's what the evolutionists tell us. When you read the Bible yourself, you'll see very plainly, very short, plain statements. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's a scientific statement. It's demonstrable in science. Let's take a look at another one. When we talk about evolution, and we talk about erosion, we talk about science. Listen to this. When we talk about erosion, what's even more surprising is the discovery that all of the continents on Earth would be worn down to sea level in just 14 million years. But there's no evidence for such drastic erosion. In fact, the mountains and valleys on Earth appear to have been very recently made. Their sharp, angular appearance testifies to their youthfulness. Now, you go out here and you take a look at the mountains. Hey, listen, they're youthful. They're sharp. They're not worn down. Now, there are some worn down mountains. Take a look here in the Appalachians. Pretty well worn down. Take a look at the Ozarks, pretty well worn down. Now take a look at the Andes, the Himalayas, and the Rockies. And they're sharp and they're angular. But, get this, if you took the rate of erosion that's going on in the world today, remember we just mentioned that. We were talking about the sediment, you know, that's on the ocean floor. Well, listen to this. If you took the rate of erosion that's going on now, and you take the elevations that are on planet Earth, the Earth in 14 million years will wear itself down to as smooth as a billiard ball. All the continents will be worn down to sea level. But they haven't been, and over the last 14 million years, it hasn't worn down. In fact, what we see now is mountain building. And what are these guys telling us? They're telling us, well, the processes that we see today have been going on for millions of years. Well, in that case, then, the mountains should be every 14 million years twice as high or wore down to sea level. No, one or the other. And we don't see either one. Now, the Earth was created, and it's gone through some convulsions, and it's gone through some catastrophes. Catastrophism is the rule. Catastrophism is what we observe. When a comet hits Yucatan, that's a catastrophe. When you have a worldwide flood, that's a catastrophe. That's not uniformitarianism. Now, they tell us that the world has been here for, you know, millions and millions and billions and billions of years. Listen. If over the past 14 million years, the rate of erosion that's been going on has been going on, just like we observe it today, then the Earth should be wore down and smooth as a billiard ball. Or it had to have had twice as much in the way of mountain ranges, twice as much land mass sitting up in the air. And if that was the case, then we would observe that 30 times more sediment in the ocean, which isn't there. Come on, wake up now. Let's smell the coffee again. Listen to this. Here's another one. Remember, Henry Morris has got 70 of these. 70. The sun is shrinking. This is science. When we actually go out here into the laboratory and we test this, we get off the philosophy, get off of the theories and the hypotheses, and you actually go out here with the instruments and you measure it, you find that the sun is wearing down, it's burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. A Newswire report. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century, and science has been watching now for over 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. If the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. The reason they say that it's been consistent since the origin of the sun, which, how long has it been there? Well, they tell us it's been there for millions and millions and billions of years. Preposterous. Preposterous. Right now, the sun is shrinking at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Uniformitarianism tells us that's the way it's always been, it's the way it's always going to be. Okay, it's your story, guys. Let's test it. If the sun continues to shrink at the rate of 5 feet an hour, how long will the sun at 750,000 miles in diameter last? And the answer is 100,000 years. Not millions or billions, just 100,000 years the sun will burn up, gone. Now, for us today, that's no big deal because I don't plan to be here in 100,000 years. But listening to these clowns tell us this story over here, then 100,000 years ago, the sun was burning up at 5 feet an hour. That's their story now. And then 100,000 years before that, and so on back down the line. Listen, 20 million years ago, the sun would have been 93 million miles in diameter, which is the distance from here to the sun. Obviously, the Earth would have been burned up, gone, 20 million years ago. Then they come back and tell us, but the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. Hell, if the sun had burned up 20 million years ago, how could you have had dinosaurs here 65 million years ago? And they say, well, the dinosaurs lived from 130 million years ago to 65 million years ago. Can you see how nutty this is? Nutty. Preposterous. Now let's test this one again. This is Henry M. Morris. He wrote the book called The Genesis Flood. And he uses a standard evolutionary assumption. Using their assumption, he created a table of 70 separate natural processes of worldwide change, and every single one of them fails. How do you like that? Now, the other day, my neighbor assured me that an orderly evolutionary sequence spanning millions of years was indicated by the rock strata with its ascending fossils. For example, coal beds were laid down 340 million years ago. Dinosaurs ruled from 130 to 65 million years B.C., and man appeared just a million or so years ago. Okay, got these numbers down? Get a pen and paper out here. Let's write this down. So they're telling us here, the coal beds, you know, this is where out in Wyoming now, they're digging coal out of the ground. That was laid down 340 million years ago. Okay. And then 130 million years ago, the dinosaurs came along, and then they died out 65 million years ago. And then 1 million years ago, man appeared. Okay, got that? Let me tell you something. In most parts of the world, this theoretical sequence never occurs. Remains of marine and land animals are mixed up, and they're mixed up in every possible sequence. Human relics are found inside these coal beds. All right, now let's pause now for a moment. They tell us that man appeared about a million years ago, but we find human remains in coal beds 340 million years old. Now, come on. Either men have been around for 340 million years, or the coal beds were laid down a million years ago, or something less than that. As if that weren't tricky enough, these remains of human origin sometimes occur with or beneath the bones of dinosaurs. So now we have found human remains with dinosaur bones and under the dinosaur bones. Now remember, the dinosaurs were here 130 million years ago, died out 65 million years ago, man shows up 1 million years ago, and we find man's bones in with the dinosaur bones. Come on. Come on. Now, do they write slick, four-color, glossy textbooks and tell us that? Not once. I have never read that in Reader's Digest. I've never seen that in National Geographic. Now, you'll find that in some obscure texts. You'll find that in doctorate papers and master's thesis. You'll find that the archaeologists and others, when they go out and they find these pieces of evidence, if they don't fit with the evolutionary propaganda, they throw it out. They bury it. They just dig a hole somewhere. You'll never see it. Which is why I said, well, let me show you this. Did you know this existed? Listen, here's the name of the book again. It's Dead Men's Secrets by Jonathan Gray. We're just scratching the surface. This guy wrote another 20 books along this line. Now, I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right and you're wrong. I don't really care what people believe. But for the benefit of those of you out there that have been listening and watching this, and you're sitting there saying, hey, this doesn't add up. You bet it doesn't add up, and here's why. Now, if you want to be able to put this into your Sharp EL-1197, this is the first treatise you want to get, called Dead Men's Secrets. Jonathan Gray is the guy's name. and then start putting the numbers, crunching the numbers. And listen, if you're a plumber, carpenter, electrician, housewife, you know, you're a waitress, bus driver, truck driver, hell, any of us can do these numbers. You know, assuming that you can add two and two. Do a little subtraction. Nothing in here that would require that you have some kind of a degree from Harvard or some business school or something to put these numbers together. And all of a sudden, when we take a look at the scriptural story, that not only makes sense, but is demonstrable in the laboratory. I mean, we can actually put the numbers to that, crunch them, and when we come back with the evidence that's available, hey, that's what adds up and that's what makes sense. Then when you start putting this together with evolution, you'll see in a heartbeat, hey, these guys have got their heads right square up their derrieres. Now, man and the dinosaur died together. Man and the dinosaur. Dinosaurs and humans lived together. I remember when I was a kid, they used to say, you'll never find a human remain in dinosaur strata. We now do. We found them all over the world. It is true. When we were ignorant and we hadn't found them yet, and then they were touting off about, you know, how evolution was true, accurate, and correct. Now that we find that the human remains with the dinosaurs, now they don't say a word. They just shut up about it. Again, when the evidence doesn't fit the theory, throw the evidence out. But there's more. Figure out what this does to the theory of evolution. For one thing, it does not allow for the vast periods of time needed for the organic evolutionary process. And the truth is, each successive layer of sediment with its dead bodies was deposited wave upon wave by the deluge and sorted further by local currents. Remains all over the world, often perfectly preserved, attest that countless billions of creatures were buried suddenly and violently in a waterborne disaster. Animals from different geographical zones and all climatic areas of the world are found heaped together in one common graveyard. Sometimes lower strata contain fossils of smaller creatures, while in the higher strata, larger animals are found. This is a logical sequence of an advancing global flood. And often the first to be engulfed were the smaller, less mobile creatures, whereas larger animals escaped to higher ground, to be overtaken later. These successive burials were accomplished within a year. Now let's think this through. I'm not talking about the raw material of our planet, which is possibly 5 billion years of age. Life on Earth is quite a different matter. This is a recent event. Now, if we take a look at Genesis 1, verse 1, it says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." I don't think that the earth was here 5 billion years ago. I think the mass and matter was created right then and there on the first day of creation. That's my take on that. Now, it could be that the earth was without form and void, and that sometime prior to that, the mass and matter had been created. That the scripture doesn't tell us. So we're unable to with specificity say that the actual mass and matter was created on day one, although that's what I think based upon what I see in the record. He doesn't say that he made it 5 million years ago and then came back and finished the job later. Moreover, if we're totally honest about this, we should not ignore the substantial new scientific evidence suggesting that even the Earth's raw materials may be measured in terms of only thousands of years. Now, there's another scientific reason for believing that. There's a thing called polonium. Polonium. And it exists in granite rock. And I forgot the guy's name, but he used to work for the Oak Ridge Tennessee laboratory, and he was doing experiments on polonium, and he discovered that this polonium, it's a kind of a radioactive element, that it was created in less than 1/200th of a second. So when the term, when we hear this term, and God said, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, or in the beginning, God said, let there be a light. That appears that the polonium that we find in the granite was instantaneously created. Created out of what? Well, it appears that it was created out of nothing. And somebody's going to say, well, you can't create something out of nothing. Well, you're right, I can't. This guy says he can. We know there's been no past eternity of matter. We know that the matter that's here is degenerating. The example we used in the last program, you know, this is Sir Isaac Newton. Now he says, if you get a ship that's out in the middle of the ocean, half of its fuel has been consumed and half of its provisions, you know that when that ship set sail, it had to be full of fuel to get to where it's at. Had to have twice as many provisions on it as it's got now. And we know that we're consuming these provisions and consuming the fuel. This thing's going to run out of fuel. It's going to run out of provisions at some time in the future. The Earth is running down, and life as we know it on this planet is going to cease to exist. The sun is going to burn out in 100,000 years. It has to be sustained. And there's a guy in the scripture that says that he sustains it all by the power of his strength. Well, the other day my neighbor assured me that an orderly evolutionary sequence spanning millions of years was indicated by the rock strata. You've all heard that. We've all been told that. That's a lie. It doesn't do any such thing. We believe it because that's what we were told. But when we test it and we actually put it in the laboratory, that isn't true. That isn't what's going on here. Now, in an interview with Science and Mechanics in July 1968, Emanuel Velikovsky expressed surprise that the body, brain, and mind of man, a tremendously sophisticated biological apparatus, supposedly spanning millions of years of time, was able to produce a recorded history of only a few thousand years. Well, doesn't it make you wonder? Could it be that man is not that old, after all? Now, we speak of millions of years for terrestrial life only because evolution demands that it be so. Evolution needs all of that time to explain all of these creatures. In other words, evolution has an answer that it likes and is trying to make the questions and the facts fit the answer that's already been created. But when we take a look at the facts and the questions, they don't fit the answers that we've been receiving over the past 150 years. That's what the problem with evolution is. The exaggerated time element must be rejected. It's preposterous poppycock. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and then download it directly right there on your own computer. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors and publications are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, they could be religious or economic or sectarian, sometimes they're racial or maybe ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network, or, for that matter, the local radio station you're listening to. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call us here at the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about ancient man. Ancient man was a pretty smart critter, as we see the evidence of it all over the earth today. Not in one, two, or three places, but I mean in whole areas of science, on every continent, in every nation. We find by the geography, astronomy, cosmology, mathematics, metallurgy, construction of large scale and construction techniques, social organization, engineering, mechanical devices, everyday items in our museums that came from these ancient men, the clothing they wore, the art that they produced, the medicine that they practiced, the electricity that they used, the flight and the space travel that we can now identify. The ancient science, the weaponry, nuclear weapons before 1945, their civilizations and their worldwide distribution all testify to a special creation and a worldwide destruction. Twice. Once with the deluge and the second time at the Tower of Babel. Now, we should revise prehistory. Constant media bombardment has molded our attitudes until we accept this evolutionary time viewpoint without question. Those who influence us try hard to ignore the real nature of their preferred or their proffered sacred cow, and it's 100% speculation. It is not within the scope of this work to present the growing mass of scientific evidence for a dramatically recent timescale. This is reserved for a subsequent book. Does it really matter what we believe concerning our roots? Well, I think it does very much. By having lost our historical links to our early ancestors, we have lost much of our heritage. And in rediscovering these links, we may begin to find ourselves. As William Fix observes, the question of our origin is of supreme importance because it's the basis of our identity and destiny. The models with which we identify profoundly influence our behavior. The man who believes he came from a beast may be more inclined to behave like one. The image is not only degrading, it is dangerous. So now, having swept aside the false conventional view of prehistory, with its idea of a lowly form of man, living in caves, using stone tools, and incapable of producing the wonders of the past, we at last see a door opening before us. Now we're ready to conceive of that past as awesome and fantastic, as it really was. Well, at least almost. Two loose ends remain. One is the space gods theory. Could intelligent man's sudden appearance conceivably be the result of a visit by galactic astronauts? That's a question that's been raised. The Bible tells us very plainly that there is a God, and he is an alien, a space alien. He lives out in the third heaven. He's way out there in the boondocks. If you want to know how far this guy lives away from planet Earth, if you remember from Sunday school, Remember at Easter time they tell you this story? Jesus, when he was resurrected at the tomb. These women went down to the tomb and they were going to embalm his body. When they got there, though, he had already been resurrected. So they met a guy, and it was the Messiah, but they didn't recognize him. And so he identified himself to them, and they were pretty excited, and they wanted to grab a hold of him, and he said, "Don't touch me. Don't touch me." And I'm sure they were pretty shocked about that, and he told them why. He said, "I have not yet ascended to the Father." All right, so they didn't touch him, and so some time goes by. And the next story we hear, this same guy, the Messiah, walks through a wall into a room which is locked. And 12 men are in there, 12 disciples, or 11. And then while they're in there, they see this guy come in, and they ask him, they said, "How did you get in here? The doors are locked." Story gets a little bit better. One of them, his name was Thomas. They called him Doubting Thomas. And when the Messiah identified himself, "Well, don't you recognize me?" They're all looking at him. They didn't recognize him. Then all of a sudden it dawns on him, oh my God, this is the Messiah. You know, this is Jesus. Yes, as they would say in church. This is Jesus. And so Thomas doubted it. He said, no, I saw the body, I saw the crucifixion, this guy's dead. You got to be some kind of an imposter. And so the Messiah held out his hand and he said, "Here, stick your finger right in that hole. Stick your finger right in there." Now, he told those women not to touch him. Now he tells Thomas to go ahead and stick his finger in the hole. This guy traveled from planet Earth out to the third heaven and back in 24 hours or less. 24 hours out to the third heaven and back. Hey, we're not talking about the speed of light here. The speed of light is so slow that it would take billions of years to get from here out to the third heaven. This guy's got to move faster than the speed of light. So this story of "Beam me up, Scotty" isn't as wild as it might sound. Now, this revision of history over here is a requirement for the understanding of what actually happens in history in the past. Now, the Bible is a history book. About one-third of the Bible deals with history. It tells us about the Babylonians and about the migrations of various people, such as the Israelites, through Europe and to England, Ireland, and Scotland, and on over to the United States and Canada. All of the 10 tribes of Israel, the lost 10 tribes, are identified today. We can identify them. The Reubenites are in France, and the Ephraimites are in England. And the Danites are in Denmark. Denmark, Danites. And we can identify these people historically. We can identify them through their heraldry. We can identify them through their names. We're not talking off the top of our heads. There's evidence that abounds. And you have to be willingly ignorant. You have to be dumb on purpose to miss it. Now, if you've never seen it before, that's another story. But if you want to see it, let's start here with this book on Dead Men's Secrets by Jonathan Gray. Now, remember in chapter 29, he pointed out that there was a war. Let me see if I can find chapter 29. Here's chapter 26. You know, I mentioned this to you, the use of atomic weapons, the use of radioactivity. Let's conclude this way. the use of radioactivity. Scientists have found a number of uranium deposits that appear to have been mined or depleted anciently. In Egypt, in the tombs of the pharaohs, the pitch used to preserve corpses contains highly radioactive substances. The cloth used for swathing is radioactive. The burial chambers were probably full of radioactive dust, and perhaps the priests made use of this to protect the tombs from desecrators. But more importantly, and the significance of this is absolutely world or earth-shaking, researchers have recently unlocked a time capsule, a number of documents buried in incomprehensible terms until our present time. When translated in the last century, they were not understood, nor could they be until modern knowledge caught up with former knowledge and was able to recognize it. These very ancient documents contain what is now startlingly familiar language, and their contents are quite alarming. Here are eyewitness reports that raise the compelling question: did nuclear war wipe out large sections of the civilized world in the third millennium BC after the flood? So in ancient documents in India, dated about 2450 BC, the Indian text recounts in detail how aircraft were used to launch a weapon that devastated three cities. The record is unnervingly similar to an eyewitness report of an atomic bomb explosion. It describes the brightness of the blast, the column of rising smoke and fire, the fallout, the intense shock waves and heat waves, the appearance of the victims, and the effects of radiation poisoning. That's six elements to an atomic explosion. The historical text states, an iron thunderbolt contained the power of the universe. An incandescent column of smoke and flame as bright as 10,000 suns rose in all of its splendor. The clouds roared upward. Blood-colored clouds swept down onto the earth. Fierce winds began to blow. Elephants miles away were knocked off their feet. The earth shook and scorched by the terrible, violent heat of this weapon. Corpses were so burnt that they were no longer recognizable. Hair and fingernails fell out. Pottery broke without cause. Birds were turned white, and after a few hours, all of the foodstuffs were infected. Thousands of war vehicles fell down on all sides, and thousands of corpses were burnt to ashes. Never before have we seen such an awful weapon, and never before have we heard of such a weapon. The war zone was the upper regions of the Ganges River Valley. Passages from this ancient Sanskrit text, the Mahabharata, are a nerve chiller. The cold terror of the survivors still lives in its pages. And until we started to experiment with radioactive substances, no person on earth could have described radiation sickness, for the simple reason that such a disease did not exist. And yet radiation sickness in clinical detail is described, with the hair loss, the vomiting, the weakness, and eventual death, which are the classic symptoms of radiation poisoning. More significantly, it states that one could save himself by removing all metal from his person and immersing himself in water of the rivers. The reason can only be in order to wash away contaminated particles, the exact procedure that we follow today. In Babylon, the Gilgamesh epic recounts a day when the heavens cried out, the earth bellowed an answer, lightning flashed forth, fire flamed upwards, it rained down death, the brightness vanished, the fire was extinguished, everyone who was struck by the lightning was turned to ashes. Now, when we read these ancient texts 100, 200 years ago, you know, the Gilgamesh epic has been around, you know, for a couple of hundred years. But who could understand it until our modern time, when we've actually seen the effects of radiation sickness and nuclear explosions? But there's more. In fact, just to show you how many there are, because I won't have time to read them all, we've got one from India, one from Babylon, one from the Gobi, Tibet, Mongolia, Mexico, Canada, the United States, Gabon in West Africa, Pakistan, Iraq, Babylon, Israel, Turkey, Syria, the Sahara, Egypt, the Lofoten Islands, Scotland, Ireland, Canary Islands, the Isle of Man, the Western Pacific, Peru, Brazil, and Easter Island. All have written records or evidences of these nuclear bombs. And I told you earlier, there's 25 sites that we have uncovered so far. That doesn't mean that there's only 25. That means that so far we've uncovered 25 sites worldwide. Let's take a look at another one. In Mongolia, the Tibetan stanzas of Zen depict a Holocaust engulfing two warring nations who engaged in aerial warfare utilizing blinding rays, spheres of flame, shining darts, and lightning. The nations were the dark-faced and the yellow-faced, the Mongolians of the Gobi civilization. A few of the yellow-faced escaped the flooding and nuclear destruction, but the dark-faced appeared to have been annihilated. The straight eye peoples of Europe and the Middle East were among the survivors, apparently having been also involved in this nuclear conflict. In Mexico, ancient Mayan texts describe the destructive effects, unfortunately quite recognizable to us after Hiroshima, of a fire from the sky that put out eyes and decomposed flesh and entrails. Great cities to the north were destroyed. Canadian Indians speak of men who flew upon the skies and had shining cities and grand homes to the south. Then an enemy nation came and there was terrible destruction. All life in the cities was gone. Nothing but silence remained. The Hopi Indians in the United States recount that some of these of the Third World flew to a great city, attacked it, and returned so quickly that the inhabitants did not know where their attackers came from. Soon many nations flew to attack one another, so corruption and destruction came. In Gabon, West Africa. In Africa, there are remains of a prehistoric nuclear chain reaction that cannot be explained by natural means. Discovered down a mine, the remains appear to be residue from an artificially produced pre-flood nuclear reaction. In India, there are Indian remnants which strongly suggest that an atomic war was waged in the distant past, and precisely in the region specified in the old records, that is, between the Ganges and the Ramahal Mountains, there are numerous charred ruins which have yet to be explored. Indications are that these ruins were not burned by ordinary fire. In many instances, they appear as huge masses fused together with deeply pitted surfaces like tin struck by a stream of molten steel. Further south, in jungle-claimed areas of the Deccan, are more such ruins, and the walls have been glazed, corroded, and split by tremendous heat. And in some buildings, even the surfaces of the stone furniture have been vitrified, that is, melted and then crystallized. And in the same region, a human skeleton was found with radioactivity 50 times above the normal level. No natural burning flame or volcanic eruption could have produced a heat intensive enough for this. The heat of millions of degrees, that of thermonuclear reactions, is necessary. Now think about that. Glazed walls, radioactive skeletons. There are reports from probably 20, I didn't count these, let me just count them up, see how many of these reports there are. Come from Egypt, there's one. India, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 28 reports. 25 actual nuclear sites where bombs have gone off and the glass is fused. Now, far from evolution, which spouts a lot, beats their gums, and talks about theories and about hypotheses, these are actual sites. These are actual pictures that you can look at, that you can read about, that people have been finding for the last 200 or 300 years and didn't know what they were looking at until modern times. Not until we torched off a bomb ourselves and took a look at the results of it could we then go out and say, oh my God, look at what we've got over here. Same thing we've got at Alamogordo. And then we can draw a conclusion. We can say, well, if this is what a nuclear weapon does in Alamogordo, and this is what we see here in Pakistan, India, or we see here in Mexico, or in Yucatan, or Brazil, then what does that tell us? Now, the people that are hiding this, these are politicians and archaeologists, prehistory, evolutionists, college professors. Remember old Mark Twain? I always liked old Mark. He said there are liars, and then there's damn liars, and then there's statistics. These are people who know the truth and then hold it back. And they were mentioned by the Apostle Paul in the Scripture. Those that hold back the truth, those are the damn liars. It's one thing to be deceived, it's another thing to be ignorant. But when you know the truth and you hide it, when you take the evidence and you conceal it, that makes you a damn liar. And boy, are there a bunch of them out there. And archaeology and politics are just full of them. Now let's take a look at the source again. I can't read them all to you. We haven't got time for that. But Dead Men's Secrets is the book. It's written by a fellow named Jonathan Gray. He wrote more than 20 others. He puts out a newsletter, and those books and those newsletters and sources are here in this book, page 352, page 353, and so on, Surprising Discoveries and so on. You can get it all for yourself. Probably Barnes & Noble will have a copy of it. Remember, it's $20.95. $20.95. Worth every penny. Hey, I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.